Next Chapter Podcasts.
Hi, we're live. Oh my God. Okay, I don't know if anyone's watching this yet, but be patient while I invite my co-host. I've never done a Instagram live before. Okay. Oh, and there's British. Amazing.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Can you hear me, see me okay?
I can.
Good.
Great. I can't begin to tell you how excited I am to see you, and the fact that I actually did this correctly is really, really
We did it. I was nervous too. You know, how many like producers, engineers, podcasters does it take to figure out an Instagram live?
I know, right? They're harder than they think. I think this is the thing is that as an audio person, I'm used to constantly having control over the media. And with this, it's like I hit a button and then things happen and then who knows?
You just got to trust fall into it.
Yes, you're right. I need to do more of this in my life. You're absolutely right. I'm so glad you've brought this up. All right, so Bridget Todd, tell us more about you and what you do.
I am a podcaster, a creative professional. I am lucky enough to be the host of Next Chapter Podcast's award-winning and current award-nominated podcast, Beef, which if you don't know Beef, we explore all the juiciest, pettiest rivalries from culture and history that you've never heard of, and really get into the ways that rivalries can really drive innovation, drive people to be better, to make better versions of whatever it is they make. That's me.
That's amazing. That's great. Okay, I'm Lindsay Jones. I'm a composer and sound designer. I work in theater, film, and podcasting, as well as other crazy new media, whatever comes up. And then I also do storytelling sometimes on the side. And I'm here because I was nominated for Best Original Score for Next Chapter Podcast presentation of Othello, which is a multi-part podcast telling the entire story of Othello. And I created the score and sound design for it. And I'm so excited to be nominated for it. Like, I'm used to not being recognized. So when people give you an award sort of a recognition, you're like, really? This is me? So I'm super, super excited to be here. So let me ask you this, like, why rivalries? Like, tell me about the story of Beef. Like, how did it come about, and what is the sort of driving influence behind it?
So I wish I could take full credit for this idea, but I cannot. I have to really shout out the amazing team at Next Chapter Podcast, Jeremiah, Peter, the whole gang. Like, this is their brainchild. But the way that I come to this personally is that I am interested in tech, right? I got my start working for tech companies. I have another podcast on iHeartRadio called There Are No Girls on the Internet that really explores tech and innovation. And you would really be surprised how often the thing that is driving a technical innovation is rivalry or pettiness or jealousy. And I've just always been somebody who is interested in like these emotions and these dynamics that we say are bad, like from the shadow self. I am a petty, jealous bitch myself. So of course I'm drawn to this. I'm drawn to the smallness in people, but how that smallness can drive folks to be great.
Wow. That's great. Also, I really admire you for just coming straight out and calling yourself out right at the beginning of this. That is amazing. But honestly, we all have that in us in some way. We're all petty bitches at the end of the day on some level.
Aren't we all? I mean, we're having this conversation because our shows are nominated for awards. And I feel like on the one hand, I feel this need to be like, oh, it's an honor just to be nominated, like blah, blah, blah. It's just an award. But then part of me is like, I want to win. Do you feel the same?
Yes, I absolutely do. Yeah, I'm, you know, like, I feel like this is my opportunity to be like, look at me, I do things. You know what I mean? And without shame at all about it. I feel like I dive 100% into it. I listened to one of the Beef podcasts about the rivalry between James Brown and Joe Tech.
And yes.
I was absolutely captivated. I'm a huge James Brown fan. And somehow I did not really know the Joe Tech side of it. And so like hearing that story about how people would go like James Brown literally shot people essentially in order to get to settle the score with Joe Tex. And it is amazing how far people will go to like really go all the way with a rival.
Yes. And that's one of my favorite rivalries, the James Brown and Joe Tex story. And one of the things I love about it is how it gave each performer the opportunity to be like very theatrical in their rivalry. Like Joe Tex would get on stage and sort of mimic James Brown's dance routines. Like he would have somebody like, you know how James Brown would do the thing where somebody would put a blanket or a cape on him and like walk him off stage. Right. Joe Tex had a kind of a jokey version of that. So, you know, these rivalries really set them up to really take their performances to the next level. A petty level, yes, but the next level.
Yes. And it's ironic because, of course, James Brown would be defined throughout his life as like this, you know, incredible social change leader. And yet at the same time, you know, if he had more than one sort of violent encounter with guns. You know, that when I was in college, I went to the North Carolina School of the Arts. And when James Brown was arrested, he was arrested in South Carolina and he was in jail for a while because he shot up his offices. I don't know if you remember this story, but essentially he was upset that he thought someone in his office building had used his bathroom without his consent. He shot up the building and then drove around. And then ultimately they shot out his tires in South Carolina and then he was arrested. And I remember saying, like, I was in school in North Carolina that weekend and I was like, we have to go to South Carolina and we have to visit James Brown in prison. Like, we need to do this to talk to him. And it seemed like such a great idea. And by the time we had gotten it together, I read an article that literally like something like 1,000 people had lined up outside this jail with the same idea that they were all going
to
be Godfather of Soul in jail. So sadly, I was not able to do that. But it was like, but listening to that podcast and listening to the story of James Brown sort of taking his revenge on Joe Tex, I'm like, that, I have no doubt that that absolutely happened the way you guys put it out there. It was great.
Yes. If anyone watching or listening, the interview that James Brown did on the news right after being released from prison after that incident is like worth a watch. I'll just put it that way. It's like burned in my brain as like one of the top pop culture moments that I will never forget. I almost can do it from heart. It's so
that
good.
Lindsay,
I have to ask, where in North Carolina is the North Carolina School of the Performing Arts?
It's in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, which is actually where I grew up. I went to the School of the Arts to be an actor and started off my career as an actor there. And then really fell into sound design and writing music for theater first, totally by accident. What happened was I was living in Chicago, playing in a band and working as an actor. And I had a friend of mine say to me, hey, we're doing the show and we need this loud rock music for it. Can you put this together? And I was like, sure. And they said, oh, by the way, also we need sound design as well. Can you do that? And I was like, yeah, I can do that. And I had no idea what that was. So I sort of put together what I thought it was and made it happen. And then that show wound up running for like 6 months. And so then all these people started calling me and saying like, hey, could you do the sound design and music for our show? And I thought, well, I'll just do this until the jobs dry up and then I'll go back to acting. And that was over 30 years ago. Like the jobs have never dried up and I've just sort of fallen into this crazy career of writing music and putting sound together for theater and podcasts and films and all sorts of stuff. And I just feel super lucky and super blessed. And ironically, I now sort of am an adjunct professor at the North Carolina School of the Arts teaching music history and composition for theater. So I've gone full circle back to them in recent years. Oh, here's Kitty.
I know, she likes to jump up on me whenever she should not. She's like, oh, let me jump on Bridget.
Awesome.
I went to school at East Carolina University, also in North Carolina. It's so funny what you say about really not knowing what sound design was or what it entailed. I feel like so many people, myself included, who are in the podcast space kind of fell into it not really knowing what they were getting themselves into. I myself lied on a resume about knowing how to do Final Cut Pro. And then when I got the job, I was like, okay, like I have to teach myself how to do this. So I just love how common it is that people just sort of lied their way into it, fibbed their way into it, fell into it, and then have been doing it for years.
Totally. That's amazing. And so, like, did you learn Final Cut Pro? Did you figure it out?
I learned it well enough to not get fired. It was my first ever podcast job.
Nice. That's incredible. Wow. Yeah. That's pretty impressive to talk your way into a job saying I know how to use Final Cut Pro, because I have tried to use it poorly myself.
You know, it's the University of YouTube. I am a proud graduate.
That is great. That's awesome. Yeah, thinking about revenge, of course, I also think about Othello, which is this really amazing presentation. If you all haven't heard this presentation of Othello, it's so good. The cast is so incredible. And like, what happens in the way my job works is basically I'm sent these raw tracks of just the actors performing the lines. There's no sound, there's no music, there's nothing. It's literally just lines and that's it. And sometimes when you get that stuff, you're literally like, I'm not sure how this is going to work out. But I remember hearing that these performances as they were coming in and being so inspired right away by their by how incredible they were, and just like the revenge aspect of these performances is absolutely amazing, and the rivalry of that is so huge in Othello, and like what ultimately sort of ruins everyone is their inability to be like, okay, I've done enough now. It's like they just keep going and going and going until everything is destroyed.
Curious, like, how did you approach the sound design for that element of the story, that revenge element? Like, how did you approach really adding the soundscaping to that?
So I had a conversation with the director, Victor Milana Maag, and also the playwright adapter, Emfoniso Udafia. And what they were really interested in was a very tight sort of very clean representation. And so we talked about like what was the minimal amount that we could do and get the impression across. So the score is entirely just cello, violin, and drums, and that's it. And most of the time it's just a solo cello by itself. And what I think I love the most about the cello is that it's in the same sort of tonal register as the human voice. So it feels like a person singing. It really feels like it's coming from a deep human place. So it's able to convey sort of like sadness and melancholy and anger better than almost any instrument. But what I also like doing, and what also is part of the Othello score, and in particular is part of the opening theme of Othello, is it has the ability to have these really tight sort of like scraping sounds that you can make. Mm. The opening theme of Othello is very much a quick sort of taut, like action-based theme made entirely of cello that sort of does it. And then from beyond there, the sound design is very much trying to be in the world of that time period, which is the 1500s. So it's a lot of like village sounds and things like that. But yeah, it's a particularly sort of bloody interpretation of it. The way people die in it is sort of, I mean, like I got to, you know, murder people in a way that I don't usually get to murder them, which is
like, hopefully you're not murdering in general. Hopefully.
So yeah, it was really, really cool to put together. And I'm just so grateful to be working on Shakespeare in podcast form, because I feel like it's a whole new sort of avenue for people to really experience it. And learn from it. I've had the good fortune to work on almost every single play by William Shakespeare. I have one. Yeah.
What's the one you haven't worked on yet?
Two Gentlemen of Verona. So okay. You know of anybody out there, Gentlemen of Verona, that's my last play. I will go anywhere in the world. Please call me and I will go there.
What is it about Shakespeare that speaks to you so much?
You know, in the same way that we were talking about how the pettiness of rivalry is something that is in us, Shakespeare deals with simultaneously big theatricality you know, sort of majesty and splendor and all these things that in modern day, we've sort of eliminated a lot of that stuff, you know? But the other part is that it's able to show deep human emotion, like people really are willing to dig in and express themselves in a way that is more vulnerable than most modern day scripts will allow us. And there's something about the passion and the emotion behind that that I'm able to really identify with. And also just as an artist, I'm really inspired by it. Like, I'm just really like, as soon as I hear it, the music just appears in my brain.
Wow.
And so that's, I think that's what I like about it the most.
I also feel like it probably is a, I feel like Shakespeare's work really lends itself well to the like podcast medium. Like, you know, you put headphones on. It's like what I love about podcasting, right? Is it's so immersive. So you put those headphones on and then like you're in it. And so it doesn't matter if you're on the subway or walking through the park, you are in the world created orally through the sounds and the drama and the story. And I just feel like there's something about the medium of podcast that I think that Shakespeare's work really translates nicely to. Do you think that?
I do. Yeah, thank you. I agree with you completely. I wasn't prepared for it. I mean, really, I started working on these Next Chapter podcast series during the pandemic, which is when basically live theater was completely done and there was no work at all. And so I just felt so lucky to even have an opportunity to do this. But then almost immediately, it was like, this isn't just like a way to experience Shakespeare. In a way, it's a way to just completely sort of lose yourself in it. And, and that part is really fun and exciting. And I don't think it's like any other sort of podcast series that's out there in its way, because it's really willing to go to those deep lengths. Go ahead, yeah, I'm sorry.
No, please.
I was gonna ask you about There Are No Girls on the Internet. What's that podcast like?
Yeah, so There Are No Girls on the Internet is a podcast that I've been making since 2020. It's on iHeartRadio, and it explores the intersection of identity, technology, the internet, and social media. I really got interested to make the show because I feel like so often we are told, whether explicitly or implicitly, that identity doesn't have anything to do with the internet or technology, right? When you log on to the internet, your identity does not matter. But there is scores of evidence that point out that that is not true. Not to mention just like personal experience. The way that I experience the internet as a Black woman is going to be different than the way that you do, different than the way somebody who has a completely different identity would experience the internet. And so I really kind of got frustrated because so many tech podcasts that I like, just seem to sidestep this. They would be like, oh, well, identity is like, maybe that's kind of important. And maybe we'll do like a very special episode about Black Lives Matter or something every now and then. But like, they really weren't confronting the fact that I know to be true, which is that identity is at the core of so much of our internet experience, whether it's gender, race, class, sexuality, you know, military status, immigration status. All of this matters when it comes to the internet. All of it matters when it comes to life. And so I really wanted to create a place and a platform where identity, we didn't shy away from those conversations. And our examination of the internet and technology was really grounded in the fact that these things matter. So that's There Are No Girls on the Internet.
That's so cool. That's really, really interesting. And have you like seen any change as a result of these conversations, or have you, is there a way to sort of, you know, measure how things are evolving over time as the awareness of this continues?
Yeah, this is such a, what an insightful question. I would say, I think that I have seen, so I've been making the podcast since 2020. I think that it was kind of a hard sell then that we should be telling stories of the internet in a way that grounds identity. I think today in 2024, that is no longer a hard sell. I think that people are seeing the ways that, you know, identity issues are at the forefront of technology. I think like when you look at things like conversations around non-consensual deepfake pornography, for instance, obviously that's a technological issue that, you know, impacts women more than men, right? Statistically speaking. And so I think that people are a little more willing now to see the ways that tech issues are just gender issues or racial justice issues or climate issues or whatever, that like technology is really this through line running through all of them.
Wow, that's so cool. That's really fascinating. And you know, it's the kind of thing where I'm so grateful that a podcast like that exists, because I'm not sure I would necessarily have thought about this on my own, but I need that type of information to be able to really think more about it.
Yeah, and I'm proud to say, like, I wasn't the first, like, there are podcasts that really influenced me, but I think that today in 2024, there are so many more podcasts that are doing a similar kind of work of really asking these critical questions about technology through the lens that, like, yeah, who we are and our identity matters. There were a few when I got started, but there are so many more now. And so I'm so grateful to be in this space where there are more people having these conversations about the way that identity really shapes both our online experience and how we think about that experience. I'm sorry, my cat is losing her shit back here. I don't know if you saw that. I don't know what she's done. I'm sorry. I apologize. She's like, I want to talk. I want to talk.
Yeah, I've had enough. So is there a difference between hosting a conversation versus being very much a podcast, which is telling a story from the end?
Yeah. I love both. I will say that because there are no girls on the internet is like we're talking to like experts and researchers and organizers and people who have had firsthand experiences often with the things that we're talking about. It's work that I love, but like I'm like in it, right? Like it's very it can be a little bit heavy. Beef is where I go to like have fun, right? If you talk to Pete Musto or Jeremiah or any of the folks who like get the audio, they can tell like, oh, this is somebody who is like having fun reading this script, having fun thinking about these people in dialogue with each other. And so I really think of making Beef as a great comparison to the work that I do with There Are No Girls on the Internet, but as like a way to like have fun, loosen up. People often tell me that like when they listen to There Are No Girls on the Internet, they like to listen to Beef as well, to sort of be in conversation. Sometimes I've done both in the same day and it's like, yeah, at 10 o'clock, I was talking to somebody who had some awful experience online or like did something important online. At 11 o'clock, I'm reading like a fun script about James Brown.
That's excellent. That is the kind of variety that will keep things interesting forever. That's
exactly.
Okay. So my equivalent of that is that in addition to doing Shakespeare podcasts, I also work in theater all over the country. And I also have a film, you know, film scoring career that I do as well. So the next thing is coming up for me is I have a movie coming out on Lifetime in a couple of weeks, and it is called Surviving the Sleepover. And it is exactly what you think it is. But it was sort of like my first film score for Lifetime. And I have to say, it's kind of like my bucket list. So to be able to go from like the seriousness of Othello to like, which is about these teenage girls all trying to murder each other, was really kind of fun and definitely the change of pace I needed in order to have some variety. So I'm totally.
Oh my God. I cannot wait to watch Surviving the Sleepover. My mom, she has I'm not even kidding. It's going to sound like I'm making this up, but I'm not. I mean this in the most literal sense.
Yeah.
My mom keeps a small TV in her bathroom that is always on Lifetime because like she just loves Lifetime that much. And so like no one is allowed to change the channel on this TV. So like she'll go upstairs and have her like Lifetime moment. So she'll definitely watch this. She'll be so impressed that I know the person who scored it. And Lifetime movies, they have such good scores. Yeah. Like it's like the rises and falls and crescendos, like they really like tell a story with their music. So congratulations. Wow. Cannot wait.
Oh, thank you very much. I have to say, I'm so excited now about your mom watching this movie in the bathroom. It's really, really great.
She will definitely be excited.
Okay, awesome. That's so very cool. So are you going to be at the Ambies in Los Angeles? Are you coming for it?
I am going to be at the Ambies. I am going to be there. This is my first IRL award ceremony of my whole career. I have won, not to brag, but I have won a couple of awards, and I have never gotten to go to a ceremony. The first one, I was like all set to go, and COVID happened, and so I was like, I bought a new dress, blah, blah, blah. I was so excited. So it'll be exciting to actually, I've always wanted to go to one. I finally have my, God willing, I'll finally have my chance.
They're really, really fun. They're really fun. I've never been to the Ambies before, and I'm super excited. This is my first one for that. But I have been very fortunate, knock on wood, to go to a number of award ceremonies. The COVID actually affected me, too. So in 2020, I was nominated for 2 Tony Awards for this show called Slave Play that was on Broadway.
Oh, my God. Saw Slave Play at a blackout show. I sure did.
Very cool. So, yeah, I did the music and sound for that and was nominated for Tony Awards for both the music and sound. And so then what happened is they nominated the show, and then it took, like, I don't know, almost a year before we could do the actual ceremony. But normally where people are, like, a Tony nominee for, like, 6 weeks or so, like, I got to be able to be a Tony nominee for, like, an entire year. So it was, like, the best. I highly recommend it. Yeah, and the other great news about Slave Play is that we are opening London in July.
Oh, my God.
We're headed to the Noel Coward Theater in the West End. We start tech rehearsals on the 24th, and then we, I believe, open July the 10th. So, and we're there July 10th through, I think, the end of November. It's starring Kit Harington from Game of Thrones, if you know Jon Snow. So if anyone is over in the UK and you want to check it out, Slave Play is an incredible show. And I'm not saying that based on my work. I'm saying that based on every other person involved, including the amazing Jeremy O'Hara, who wrote the play, and Robert O'Hara, who directed it. So yeah, we'll be in at the Noel Coward Theater through the fall in the West End.
It's endorsed by Rihanna. Right. Do you know her?
I don't actually, like, I mean, obviously they would never let me. They wouldn't. But then when I got the script, they were like, this Rihanna song is written into the script. And I was like, is she okay with it? And I later came to find out that she and Jeremy are close friends. And so I was just like, will you please tell her how grateful I am that she's allowing us to use this song? And, like, cause the song is incredible, and, like, it makes the show. And then I also had to do a lot of sort of audio trickery to it, because, like, that song technically plays for the entire third act of the play. And I had to sort of morph with it. And I was like, is she okay if I kind of ruin her song in order to get it to 5 minutes? And everyone was like, yeah, it's fine. So I'm very grateful to Rihanna, and I hope to meet her someday. I'm a huge fan of hers. I would be thrilled beyond belief to do that. But
oh my God, Lindsay, you're the closest person that I've ever interacted with. First of all, being like a degree or two removed from Rihanna, but you're the closest to an EGOT that I've ever interacted with, because you've been nominated for a Tony.
Yeah.
Probably like you're like on your way to EGOT status, I bet.
Okay, so I'm pursuing a totally different thing than EGOT, because I feel like I'm not famous enough to actually be in an EGOT, but I'm pursuing something called EGOT adjacent.
Okay.
And so I've been nominated for Tony. I have scored a film that won an Academy Award, so I'm halfway. So
wait, what film?
In film, yeah. So okay. I need to have some type of passing involvement with a Grammy Award and some type of passing involvement with it. Emmy Award, and then I can be EGOT adjacent for all 4 of the categories. that's my plan.
I feel like this is an achievable goal. I feel like you're like part, like, mostly there.
You know, honestly, I'm going to tell a story which will probably get me in a lot of trouble, but at one point they were, I had heard where they were going to try and take Slave Play and turn it into like an album to make it like an audio version of it. And I think the only reason they were doing that is because they were like, if we do this, it could be considered for a Grammy. And I was like, oh, please, please make this record so I can be Grammy adjacent, please. But it has never come to fruition to the best of my dad.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, let's make it happen.
Please, please, please. Bridget, thank you so much for taking time to talk to me today. This has been so much fun to meet you. I'm really looking forward to meeting you in Los Angeles, finally.
Yes, I cannot wait. Thank you so much for taking the time and for chatting. And thanks to folks who are listening. Thanks, Ted. Thanks, Will. Thanks, Thomas. Thanks, Patricia. I'm just looking at names of people who have joined. I'm probably doing this wrong. Thanks, Kyle. All of you. Thanks so much.
Thanks, everybody. And special thanks to Next Chapter Podcast, everybody who produces the two shows that Bridget and I work on, which I'm really grateful for. And thanks to the Ambi Awards for the recognition. It is lovely to be nominated. As Bridget pointed out, we definitely still want to win.
We want to win.
All right. Take care, and I'll see you soon.
See you in LA.
See you then. Bye.
Next Chapter Podcasts.